It's Saturday Night.
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder.
Saturday night's alright.
On Saturday night.
Okay, we are live once again on Saturday night. Welcome to Dynasty Saturday Night 5, another Dynasty Fantasy Football podcast from Going for Two Live and goingfor2.com. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on the Going for Two Live audio feed. Please make sure if you're watching us here on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, turn on those notifications, like the video, and maybe even leave us some comments. We're all trying to beat the algorithm. As usual, I'm Brian Ford, and not as usual, Josh is out this week, and instead I have Going for Two's own Rahul. Rahul, how you doing?
How's it going, Brian? It's really great to be here. Jamie, yep, Josh is looking very different tonight.
Yeah.
But doing well. Thank you for having me on. Really excited to get into this with you.
Right on. And just so folks get to know you a little bit, like how long you've been playing fantasy or dynasty, or is there any like particular part of it that you feel like is a niche that you love or anything like that?
Right. Honestly, kind of a funny story about how I got into fantasy. I didn't watch football at all, besides, you know, the occasional, well, every Super Bowl, I guess, until 2021. If anything, I was like anti football. It just didn't click with me, the time and maybe the hits and stuff. And then 2021, I got almost coerced into a league with my friends. And then from then on, it's just like the dam just broke and absolutely love it. I would say I really love the stats side of it. That's how they kind of said, like, hey, like, you'll figure it out just from the numbers. Like, and that kind of fits with like my background, like what I learned in school, what I did for work. Now I'm absolutely obsessed. I can't stop thinking about it. Dynasty, I just completed my first season of, you know, Dynasty Leagues, just my first ever, round of rookie draft just started this week. So, you know, falling more and more in love with this game that we all obsess over.
Yeah, it certainly took me longer to try Dynasty, but once I did, you know, the bug got me in. And here we are. Just real quick, want to remind folks of our logo design contest. You can design our new logo. Send me at @FFChunky_ a DM on Twitter with a 16:9 ratio graphic. And it'll replace the Damian Pierce logo that we're using. We've extended the deadline past May 1st, kind of open-ended at this point. Just want to get more submissions, and then we'll probably make some sort of decision in the summer when things are a little slow and we need something to talk about. So for those of you who are new to Dynasty Saturday Night 5 or don't remember, we use lists of five on Saturday night here to just kind of have an avenue to open up a dynasty conversation, just have a little bit of fun with it. So tonight's episode, as you may know from the title that you see on your podcast feed or on YouTube, is about rookie risers and fallers. So post-draft, right? What's the fallout? We had certain people ranked or tiered a certain way going into the NFL draft. We got that information, draft capital, landing spot, etc. And now who seems to be rising and falling based on that? So in general, when you're looking at risers and fallers, Rahul, how are you sort of, you know, defining this? Like what makes a player rise or fall for you?
Right. I would really say, as probably most people would say, draft capital. The NFL draft day one seemed fantastic for all us fantasy folk, especially with the two running backs going in the top 12, and then day two came and went and it was just carnage. And I think especially with the 2023 class, I think what a lot of us were looking forward to was just the sheer depth in the running back class. I think if you'd go through people's like top 10 running back lists, we'd probably even have like maybe up to three or four that were different in the top 10, which is a testament to how deep I at least believe this class was. And then both the draft capital and the landing spots just didn't seem to follow what we'd all hoped for. So yeah, long-winded way of saying, like, I really do follow, as someone, you know, pretty new to the dynasty sphere, I am trying to follow draft capital pretty closely, and that does play a big part in my evaluation.
You know, it's funny. I don't see the doom and gloom that so many other people see, including in the running back group, and maybe that'll come up, you know, a little later as we discuss things. And maybe it was because of sort of what I thought was going to happen seems a little closer to what did happen anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a different take on Charb and Tank than some other people do. And so I think, and for other reasons too, I have been in an awkward position for me, which is like spreading sunshine and rainbows this whole week. Like, we're fine. We're good, right? Like, the NFL poops on a third of the guys we like. Listen, if you were doing a 4 or 5 round mock, right, like a week before the NFL draft, you loved everybody, right? Like, right. I mean, certain people you were fading, like I was fading Achane and Hyde or something like that. But, like, you know, you were making the case, like the positive case for the path to this guy's production. But then the NFL, you know, set, weeds out some guys, and now, you know, some rise, some fall, and here we are. Like, it happens every year, right? And, like, you know, the people who were getting Justin Jefferson at 109 in 2020 didn't think they were getting Justin Jefferson. Right. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been going at 109. So don't tell me that the 2020 class, we don't know yet. The draft is the middle, not the end. Mm-hmm. That's what I always try to tell people. So in what instances would you say stick to your priors despite the information that you get from the draft? Or do you do that at all, or how much? Like, when you're reading this draft capital and landing spot, you know, how do you say, yeah, okay, the NFL told me, or yeah, but I still think this, you know, is there any sort of like, I don't want to say system or process, but like in what instances might right. you say, well, you know, that doesn't, like for me, like 6 round draft capital for Hutchinson, right? Certainly dips him for me, right? But I still believe that there's a very good chance that coming out of all this, him and Metsy are the best two receivers on that team. Yep. You know, maybe Robert Woods is annoying in the beginning of the year and he's fine. You know what I mean? So so in what instances do you stick to your priors or not? Yeah.
I think it's going to be something very similar to what you were just alluding to there. The eye test, I think, is like very important. If I believe in the talent of a player, and you know, bear in mind again, I'm pretty new to this, but if I believe in the talent, then I'm going to maybe be more likely to let a worse landing spot or slightly lower draft capital, you know, I'm gonna be more willing to overlook that. At the end of the day, like, what's like so fun about, I guess, evaluating players out of college is that you know there's some kind of excitement when you just see like a mm-hmm. you know, prospective rookie just pop on tape. There's something mm-hmm. that yeah. like, really speaks to you. Sometimes there are players that don't speak to you as well as much as they might for others, and that's where I'm going to still rely on what I saw, even if there are some indicators that might push him down the board.
Yeah. And for those of you who are listening or watching and saying, well, what do you know better than the NFL? A lot of people like to say, well, the NFL told us what they think. And to an extent, that's true, right? But that's more true when a player falls. Mm-hmm. 32 teams told us that, right? The Lions told us something about Jahmyr Gibbs. Right. When a player gets overdrafted, I think I pay attention probably a little more, and I don't want to say discount what the NFL. Now, at the same time, right, like the Lions have a plan for him if they're going to use that capital on him, et cetera, et cetera. But like sometimes I think a player falling is more of a barometer of how the NFL thinks than a guy who maybe gets overdrafted. So before we move forward just a little bit, Jamie's got here in the chat, like, don't fall into the CEH trap with some running backs. And I get that, but like, I don't know that we have that this year. Like, right. maybe the closest thing is Achane. Like, he got the dream landing spot for his skill set. But like, you know, and I gave him a little bit of bump because I was lower than consensus on him. But like, I don't know that we have that. Like, I don't know that we have some kind of like fraudulent thing. I'll get to the CEH and the Sky Moore of this class, I think, a little later. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, you don't want to I think draft capital is more predictive from like an overall data over time perspective. I think landing spot can help you project more of like, you know, market share for targets and all and carries and all that. But but yeah, I always try to say to everybody, listen, everybody, everything's a snowflake, right? Like every prospect is its own mosaic. Like every case is its own, it's case by case scenario, you know?
And I really like that.
And as much as you can like, there are trends and like, certainly I incorporate all that, but like there are reasons that the guys are exceptions. And so anyway, but before we move forward to our list, let's pay some bills. This show is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, and they are the industry leader with best ball tournaments and private leagues and pick'ems and all major sports and all sorts of things like that. A lot of people are head over heels now about best ball mania, you know, and drafting a million teams at once. Well, we're going to help you out with that. If you're watching, we have a fancy QR code for you. And if you're listening, maybe just go to underdog.com or open up your Underdog app. And if you are a new customer and you will get a first deposit match of up to $100 if you use the promo code GF2. So go to underdog.com or open up the Underdog app. Use the promo code GF2. You'll get a deposit match of up to $100 if it's your first deposit. You can start playing and then hopefully maybe even start winning. All right. So time to get into our lists of five. Risers, fallers. We didn't do a whole episode on risers and a whole episode on fallers. We're just kind of mixing them in. Rahul, start us out. Who do you want to talk about first?
Yep. You know, the last thing we just talked about, you know, factors that may keep people high when other indicators say low, you know, I said talent. One guy that I was really high on heading into the NFL draft was Josh Downs, wide receiver out of UNC. I will say he is a faller, both for myself as well as for the market. The market case being, you know, he has gone to a team that projects to be very run heavy and also has Anthony Richardson as the new quarterback. You know, there is a strong case for Richardson being the QB1 of this class, but that's mainly based on his legs. You know, the downside case for Richardson is he is one of the most inaccurate QBs to come out of college, and that will sour people on Josh Downs. I'm just struggling to see the ceiling case for him now. You know, we will predominantly see Josh Downs line up in the slot on a team that also likes to run the ball, but also likes to run a lot of two tight end sets. You know, the whole mix of Jelani Woods and Mo Alley Cox, who's
well, they have 900 tight ends on that team, and they drafted one more. Yeah,
and so unless Josh Downs can start to figure a little bit on the outside, I just struggle to see both where the volume will come from, the touchdown upside will come from. I really love the player, but I have to say he has fallen down the boards for me a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know that I would disagree really much on that. You know, I think there was a point in sort of, you know, the pre-draft process where he was going late first, early second in mocks, and then it was early second. Now it's, you know, generally what I'm finding is mid to late second.
Right.
I'm fairly comfortable with that as far as a price tag for him. I guess I'm a little rosier on it. Like everything you said is true. Like, but I also know that like he's good at getting open. He catches everything. He can be a good safety valve for a young quarterback. And I understand the whole, three tight end, three wide receiver, 11 personnel and 12 personnel, two tight end and that sort of thing. I'd be interested to go under the hood and see what percentage of the passing plays come from each formation. Right. So like if you're off the field in two wide receiver sets, but like, I don't know, whatever, like something absurd, like 95% of those plays are runs.
Right.
I don't care much. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
But going into this, he was a guy that I was slightly fading at cost, and I put him down in my rankings a little bit because the NFL is moving toward more of like that power running and gap running to respond to the way the defenses spread out and got smaller, which was a response to the way the offenses spread out and got smaller.
Right.
Right. So like what I'm trying to do is kind of be an early adopter of like, if you're only slot and small, right? Like I'm going to maybe start to be a little more skeptical of you because of that trend starting in the NFL. I mean, you know, it's only been a couple of years, so we'll see. But yeah, I think he took a little bit of a bump. His ADP is roughly, let's see, like the mid second, like let's say 207, mm-hmm. right? Are you taking Josh Downs or Tyjae Spears?
That's very funny. I am in the middle of a draft where Josh Downs went right ahead of me at the 208, and then I took Tyjae Spears at the 209.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I probably, as you know, that is a little bit team, I would say team dependent, but I would probably still take Josh Downs there at that value. I really do like the talent. Of course, he's going into that room with Michael Pittman, who you'd figure is still going to be the wide receiver one. I also do like Alec Pierce a lot, and I think the three of them are going to be a nice little receiving core for a QB like Anthony Richardson to develop. You know, Pierce and Pittman, bigger guys, and Josh Downs, despite being small, has a surprisingly high contested catch rate.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say, I would probably still take Josh Downs there at a value of 207.
So my guy that I'm going to talk about first is a riser, but generally the market, and maybe not so much me, and that's Rashee Rice. But Rashee Rice, for me, I'm using him as kind of a representative of, I think, questionable wide receivers who have risen. So Rice and Mingo, and to a certain extent, Michael Wilson, I believe were overdrafted by the NFL based on, I think, you know, their profiles and that sort of thing. And I'm going to use Rashee Rice as my example here. So what we have, to start out, I love Rashee Rice. I love the way he plays. I like the player. I like what I see when he's out on the field. When I wrote my rookie profile about him at goingfor2.com, I made the sunny case for him, right? Like he's got a my ball mentality. You know, he's got relatively good size in a class with mm-hmm. small receivers. He's got some inside out versatility, et cetera, right? Like there are certainly, you know, flaws, right? But I loved him when he was a mid third round pick in rookie drafts. And I think this, to an extent, is the Sky Moore CEH treatment of he's getting the KC bump, right? Because now he's going earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the latest I've seen him is early third. Looking at his ADP here is roughly 205. So what we have is, like, you know, he's 23 years old, older prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Really only had like that one really good year of production, and it was late. Like Mingo, who I mentioned, 23 years old, didn't have a good production profile, right? You know, and Wilson older and had the injuries and that sort of thing. So here's the case for Rice, is that he brings a little something different than a lot of the receivers in KC.
Mm-hmm.
Like he can play a little bit on the outside, but the problem with KC as a good landing spot and people getting drunk on the landing spot is they funnel the passing game through Travis Kelce until he falls down on the field and, you know, retires. Right. And then you're one of 100 people not named Travis Kelce who are wildly unpredictable week to week. And, you know, I'm not really, I guess, you know, projections aren't like my forte, but I don't know how really a good of a target share projection you can make for Rashee Rice. And he's certainly not going to be consistent. You know, he's going to be very unpredictable week to week. You know, there is Sky Moore, there is Kadarius Toney, there is MVS. And I was joking with people, like I named like 9 Kansas City wide receivers.
And Justin Watson got some action.
You know, and so I don't know that I can really have faith in Rice, given the fact that like there were flaws in his profile and I loved him as a mid third, right? And now you put him on a landing spot where I can't really count on a whole lot of targets. I mean, sure, you're attached to Patrick Mahomes and you bring a little something different to the game than Kadarius Toney does. Okay, like I'm not completely fading you, but Rice is a riser in the market who kind of fell a little bit for me, actually, relative right. to like some other people rising and then like what I think is actually a bad landing spot.
Yeah, I'd have to completely agree with that. You know, in the draft example we were going through earlier, Rashee Rice went ahead of both Josh Downs and Tajay Spears. I think he went at the 205, actually, like you said. But I have, you know, kind of heard examples of him almost creeping into the late first, which really does seem a little egregious. You know, again, just like you said, I really liked him when the value is a little bit lower. Small school SMU, late breakout, not indicators that you really like to see. Maybe again, the size propped him up in a class like this. But when it comes down to his profile, if you see that he lacks the ability to separate consistently, he isn't explosive. It kind of speaks to me like a guy who is going to struggle to make the jump up at the next level. So yeah, I completely understand you fading him at the current cost.
I think he's a little more sneaky athletic than some people think. And, you know, I think also he has like some hands issues. Right. But the story goes that Patrick Mahomes practiced with him and told the GM, go get him. So if we're using that as, you know, a data point, then, you know, maybe that's a good sign.
But who else did Patrick Mahomes ask him to go get Clyde
CEH,
Edwards?
Right? So I'm not going to completely have fade him or have like zero shares. Right. Like, but I've got him, I think, let's see here. I've got him ranked 27th overall and a 205 ADP would have him as like, what, 17th overall? Oh, I have him 26 overall, and a 205 ADP 17th. Would have him in 17th overall. So like, I don't know that my exposure is going to match that big a gap. But he's not a guy I'm in a hurry to get, and I'll probably take at ADP, but more likely if he falls to later than his ADP. So yeah.
Right. No, that's Yeah, that's kind of where I am on him as well. I'd almost rather take a shot on like if you're in the position where drafting Rice is the, I guess, quote unquote value move to do, I'd rather just, you know, add another third and then maybe take Cedric Tillman like a little bit later.
Yeah, or pivot to a running back, like a next man up, you know, injury away running back. All right. So who's your next person you want to talk about?
Right, staying with the wide receivers, I'm going to go with Jaden Reed as a big riser for me after the NFL draft. Maybe by default, because I didn't know too much about Reed coming into the draft, and then there he was going 50th overall in the NFL draft. Checked him out a little bit. Very quick, great route runner. The knock on his game seems to be he's a little bit inconsistent with his hands, but he does seem to pop on tape. So I really like what I saw. And then he's stepping into a situation where with, I would say, really a completely wide open depth chart. Of course, Christian Watson figures to be the one out in Green Bay, but they're completely different types of players. You would think that Watson is the one to take the top off the defense, go for the bigger play, which really leaves a good role as a possession receiver there for Jaden Reed. I really like him. And, you know, going back to the example of Rashee Rice, I'd rather have Reed maybe a few spots after Rice with, again, slightly late declare production issues. Yeah, I see you there, Jamie. I do think Reed is a better than Dobbs. Immediately, you know, hit the ground running
for sure. Yeah,
yeah. The question really, I think this may be too bullish on him, but I think the only way that Reed doesn't return value is if Jordan Love completely flops, which could happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think Jaden Reed is really rising up. You know, not just draft boards, but my own personal board as well.
Yeah, I have him pretty much where I had him going into it. I'm a few spots higher. I don't know how much of that really is helium for him, but also combined with a couple other people falling like a Rashee Rice for me. But he did have a early breakout age. I think he does have some playmaking ability beyond being a possession receiver. He's kind of a tweener when it comes to size and has. I don't know, maybe not been the best at physicality, but I think he's versatile. I think he can do special teams. I think he can do like jet sweeps. I think they said, okay, we're going to spend the 50th pick on him. We have a plan for him. And like you said, walks into a wide receiver group where, there's certainly not a whole lot of, stiff competition. So, and they're completely remaking like that wide receiver room. They drafted Dontayvion Wicks in the 5th round. They drafted my boy, I think, Grant DuBose, in the 7th round, right? So, Downs and Reed, I would take before like Spears and Roshan, but like Mingo and Rice, I'd take after. Like, I don't know what that says about like that's how I kind of break them up, but. I think that's kind of how I'm approaching
it. I think I agree with you there completely, but if you look at ADP, it's probably completely flipped. It's Mingo and Rice are the ones that are going first, and then the two that I've brought up in Reed and Downs.
Yeah, I'm not going to have too much Mingo probably. Again, a guy I loved at a 3rd round value. I wrote an article about him about how much I liked him, but I liked him as a mid-3rd round, But who knows, talk about a pretty, open wide receiver room.
I think that's the case that I could make. Again, Mingo is going a little bit, he's a little bit rich for my taste, but Mingo is one that I can see the case for his value being higher in a year than it is today, just because of the opportunity in that room, as well as I want to say that Chark is on a 1-year deal and Thielen. It's a multi-year deal, but in a team-friendly way where they could get out of it in a year. So I could see the case for Mingo being, much higher valued in a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still I think he can play. I can play a little big slot. I think they can keep him on flanker on two wide receiver sets, and But again, I think it's just relative, right? Like Jamie said in the chat before, don't hate players, hate ADP. And right now, I just can't. I can't mess with Mingo's ADP. So the next guy I'm going to talk about, let's see here. I did a riser. So let me do a faller. I know not a whole lot of people are going to talk about him. So I'm going to talk about, we've been talking about wide receivers. So let me pivot to the running backs. Mm-hmm. As a group, there's three, my guy running backs who I loved going into things and loved them at certain values that certainly took a hit, right? Mostly from the market. And that's Charb, Spears, and Izzy, right? I am finding the sunnier case for just about all three of them than it seems most people are. And I'm going to use Charb as the example for that. I think this pick is worse for Kenneth Walker than it is for Zach Charbonnet, right? I am in the minority in that I would not be surprised if by the end of the year, Charbonnet is the 60 side of a 60-40 split, right? I think you don't take a running back with high second-round draft capital if you're loving the completeness of the player you have that you just spent the 2nd round draft capital on. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they like to use running backs. They like to run and they like to use several running backs. So yes, they probably do like Walker a lot. It doesn't mean they hate him that they took Zach Charbonnet, in the second round. But it means Charbonnet brings something to the field that Walker doesn't. I think Walker is a home run hitter who struggles with efficiency. I think he can be between the 20s. And I think Charbonnet is more well-rounded and brings a little bit more in the receiving game. I think he can be a red zone weapon, some goal line work, some short yardage work, that sort of thing. Like, I think they kind of have like a Rashad Penny and Chris Carson thing if Chris Carson could catch passes with Walker and Charbonnet. So he took a hit. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, if I were to pick, like, what's the worst pick for fantasy football in the entire draft, it might be this pick. But I think people are overreacting. So for me, he's a market faller, but not so much of, like, he only maybe fell like a spot or two for me. I think people look at running back as like this, I don't know, this like zero sum pie or something like that, right? Like,
well put.
Oh, well, one guy comes in and another guy will get less, right? Now, granted, when Rashad Penny was injured and then, they had a cast of characters that was whatever after Walker, right? But chances are, if Rashad Penny was healthy, Walker wouldn't get the number of touches that he did, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to say is there's a space in that backfield for touches to Charb that doesn't kill Walker's value and doesn't kill Charb's value, certainly caps their ceiling, but it's not the hair on fire situation that a lot of people are making it out to be. And so I'm fine. I have Charb ranked above where his ADP is, not by much anymore though. Right. So I have him right around, I think like the 111, 112, like not necessarily the 111, 112. I have him ranked around 11th or 12th, and I'm seeing him go like 12th, 13th, 14th, right. 15th. So, like, I'm cool with an early second. Like, I know I can get Charbonnet, who I like better than guys going before him, like A-Chain and sometimes, a couple other people. So, market faller, not so much for me. I am not – you don't have to talk me off a ledge.
Yeah. No, I definitely see – I think you hit the nail on the head with the profile that Charbonnet is going to bring and the fact that kind of – power thumper, the one who's going to get you the 3-4 yards that the game dictates you need to get. That's probably what Pete Carroll was thinking when he drafted Jack Charbonnet. Unfortunately for me, I am kind of just seeing a kind of a gross backfield where it might kill both of them. Charbonnet does have more of that receiving game, especially from his last year on school than Ken Walker ever really displayed, especially in college and, to a very, very small extent in his rookie year. But I think something that's a little bit surprising is that, first, I don't think Seattle really throws to the running back as much as, we'd want. And especially for a quarterback like Geno Smith, 33, 34, you'd think that's like the archetype for a statuesque quarterback. Geno actually quietly had about 350 rushing yards, I want to say. He's a little bit more prone to taking off than maybe like a Jared Goff or a Tua would be. So that receiving side game is there. Could it be schemed in? That's definitely a possibility. But right now I'm probably a little bit turned off on both of them, I would say.
I mean, they didn't throw the running backs. They didn't have Zach Charbonnet, right? And and Geno got worse as in the second half of the season, right? Like, don't get me wrong. It's a great story. Like, I used to be a Jets fan, and I think they, like, destroyed Geno Smith. Not Geno destroying Geno Smith. The Jets did, right? So it's a great story. I love to see him. But, like, if you compare first half Geno to second half Geno, a little different. So I think they're going to try to get him all the help that they can. I think overall, with the defense improving, you're going to see, I think, a better Seattle team. And with more weapons like Charbonnet and JSN and that,
JSN.
I think you're going to see a better offense. And so I think scoring opportunities and volume can be there for – again, like I said, it's the worst pick for fantasy in the draft, but it's still – a highly talented running back with second round draft capital on a team that likes to use running backs.
shouldn't be getting as faded as he is by the market. Yeah. Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
All right, so who's the next guy you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's stick with running backs. I think a name that we've kind of tossed around a bit already is Devon Achane, who is a riser in the market. I think most drafts really going above Zach Charbonnet, RB3 in a lot of drafts that I've seen. I don't think I'm there. I love the landings, but this is what everyone is saying. The Miami Dolphins, that's the scheme that you want to get Achane into. And he went to the Miami Dolphins. I want to say he was their first. Was he their first pick in the draft?
No, they had a pick at 51. I forget who they took there, but
But there's a lot about. I read this little story about how Mike McDaniels himself was an undersized receiver in Ivy League, and he was really hyped on getting Devon Achane. This is the one guy he really wanted to get in. Is that going to translate for fantasy? It's hard to say. I think in any kind of league where I'm going to have to set a starting lineup, and I don't actually play too much best ball, so that's most of my leagues, I'm going to trend away from Devon Achane, especially now that he's going anywhere from that 111 to 202 range, RB3. It's just a bet that I don't want to make when I still can't see him getting, you know, more than 10 to 12 touches a game. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember that they re-signed four running backs who were there last year, have already had a year in that exact scheme, not to mention Mostert and Jeff Wilson, who were with Mike McDaniels in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as high on Devon Achane as the market seems to be.
Well, this is a safe space for hate on Devon Achane, except I will say this. Like, I did bump him a little bit because of the landing spot, mm-hmm. right? He was essentially an out-at-cost guy, almost a full fade guy for me going into the draft. Mainly a size issue, right? I mean, also, I think there were flaws to his game that I didn't like, but mainly a size issue, right? And that's one of those things where I'm okay being wrong. Like, you know, I'm okay if I fade a sub-190-pound running back and I'm wrong.
Right.
You know, I'm okay doing that.
Good for him.
Right. I will say this, right? Perfect landing spot, right? Now, while a Miami Dolphins jersey doesn't weigh 10 pounds, there is some, you know, case for him, you know, thriving the way that Mostert did, outside zone, speed, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I think people think he's a better pass catcher than he really is, but I think he's got potential there to be that, to bring that piece to that offense that they didn't have, right? And we don't have clean comps for Achane, right? When you throw in size plus draft capital plus workload in college, right? Like, there is, I don't say there's nobody like Achane, he's a unicorn, but we talk about small sample size, right? So when we say, you know, sub 190 backs, you know, I'm not dismissing it, right? But, you know, what are the other variables you're putting in there? You know, has there been too many guys like Achane? Not really, right? So that's, you know, a mystery, but it's also the case for he could buck the trend. Now, again, right. It's not great, right? To pick any stat you want about small size running backs, you know, I think like the top 24 running backs the last 3 years, so 72 entries, right, in the list, three of them were sub 200, right? So it's not great, Bob. But I think it's not necessarily that they can't produce, it's they don't. And I think it's indirect. Like, size leads to draft capital,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is a very, I think, sticky data point, right? Size leads to draft capital, which leads to opportunity,
mm-hmm.
right? Size leads to opportunity. Just, you know, you're a coach and you don't think a 190-pound guy can stand up to the punishment, right? So it's not that, like, size makes you not good at fantasy. It's size affects other things that affect your fantasy output. Exactly. He's going to have to be super efficient and be faster than everybody else on the field, which is harder to do in the NFL than it is even in the SEC. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to have zero shares, right? I don't ever like fully fade a guy, right? I just not really like my thing. But I'm going to have very few at cost, right? Like I'll take one or two at cost just to diversify, but I'm happy taking somebody else there or trading the pick to somebody who actually likes Achane a little more. So Jamie's got a question in the chat about Dwayne McBride. So why don't you take that first?
Right. I think Dwayne McBride falls into that category of running back that I was more excited for before the draft, and seventh round draft capital just shatters him a little bit for me. He's going into what is, you know, there's those Cook rumors swirling about, but it is still kind of a messy backfield with Madison getting re-signed. And I kind of like Ty Chandler, who came out.
I do too.
Yeah, drafted in the fourth round last year. I'm not too optimistic for McBride. You know, he kind of popped with the tape, but what, he may have had five catches his entire college career. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bet I'm going to be taking, you know, too often this offseason.
Yeah, I think when you're in the fourth and fifth round, sometimes it's like, well, you know, throw a dart. But yeah, I agree. Like, again, he's a guy that I liked kind of at cost, but like that's also if he got like fourth or fifth round draft capital, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he brought group of five, he brought zero receiving profile, you know, and some other things into it. And now he gets the whammy of seventh round draft capital and ostensibly a crowded backfield. Now, I know saying a crowded backfield is lazy, but I also want to say, like, even if Cook gets traded, what are the types of touches that McBride is super good at? And are there a lot of them on that offense? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, like, what's the path there? I don't know that there's as much of a path there as you know, there would be if he went to a different team, even with seventh round draft capital.
Yeah, right. No, I agree with you there. And just to finish off on the Achane conversation, mm-hmm. I think I really like the way that you said that, you know, you're okay being wrong on a guy of that profile. You know, what is, you know, is a little bit interesting is he, of course, was a sprinter in college. And there's kind of a school of thought that now that he's fully focused on football, he could put on that, you know, even 10 pounds. It's not a bet that I'm, you know, going to be making too often, but Best Ball Mania, hey, if you're signing up for Underdog right now, go get some Achane in your teams, because he's the type of guy who would take that one, you know, touch all the way to the house. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to make the decision to put him into your lineup.
So Fantasy Sports Doc, the Going for Two's own Dr. Jim, did we touch on Sean Tucker yet? We did not. He seems to have slipped due to the health thing. So for me, it depends, like, what was your starting point? And then what's your reaction, right? For me, my starting point was I knocked him down to like RB10 just as a placeholder and was like, you know, kind of, but also kind of saying, well, you know, he might just be completely off my board. You know, we'll see. So if you go from that bleakness to he signed a higher UDFA money agreement than like any UDFA ever does or whatever, and goes to a backfield where there's certainly room for touches, not just in the type of touches and the number of touches, but in the fact that, like, I'm not a big Rashad White believer. Everybody uses a committee, right? Stinky offense, but like there's a case to be made. So for me, it's a question of like, if the heart's a go or whatever, and he's medically, people say you can play NFL football, then you might get a steal in the fourth round of your rookie draft, right? If your expectation was, well, I thought the 2023 class was the Messiahs and he was my RB3 going into it. Now he's a UDFA. Boo. Well, then, yeah, it's not going to look good. Where are you at with Sean Tucker?
Right. I think Sean Tucker, you know, and first and foremost, I hope everything is okay with the heart issue and he's going to be able to play in the NFL. I think he's the kind of guy that if you put on a blindfold and just someone told you his speed, his size, the fact that he caught the ball, you know, you would have been pretty high on him, but there's just something, I think, for me, missing on the tape that...
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was lower on him than some other people anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to say, like, but from that other perspective, it could be...
Yeah. The situation now, if he is as good a flyer as any in round four, honestly, in some leagues I'm seeing him go undrafted, that's the kind of guy that maybe 30% fab right off the bat, I could take that bet. So yeah, now you hypothetically a riser when, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he's a faller.
So I'm looking at his ADP roughly the mid fourth behind guys like Eric Gray, Lou Shoemaker. I could do Shoemaker, Michael Wilson. I can make the case for Michael Wilson, Dwayne McBride, Evan Hull, Sean Tucker. Like, I'll take Tucker.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm rolling the dice in the mid fourth on those three running backs, I think I'll take Tucker.
Yeah.
Like, I might have in a vacuum ranks. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I might have like Hull and Gray like slightly above Tucker just because, you know, I'm respecting fifth round draft capital versus a UDFA. But, you know, when I think about like just throwing the dart at some ceiling in the fourth round and diversifying my portfolio, yeah, I'm probably going to have some Tucker at that price.
Yeah, I think it's good that you brought up both Hull and Gray, who, of course, you know, were drafted. But when we're talking about those guys in comparison to Tucker, we have to talk about Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, and Rashad White. I think that's the bet that I'd want to look into about drafting Tucker with the mid fourth, or if he somehow falls out of the draft, you know, putting that big fat bid on. I feel a little bit more confident in Tucker having a fantasy relevant role at that point to the names that we had just mentioned.
Yeah. So Dr. Jim checking in again and saying, medically speaking, if his heart wasn't a go, he doesn't get cleared, period, full stop. So you like the flyer in the fourth if you don't like other options better. I don't know what medically cleared means. I don't know what the condition is, HIPAA laws. I know that 32 NFL teams were worried enough where they didn't draft him.
Seven times. They passed on him.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, there's a there, maybe, right? So, all right. Let's see. Am I next? Yeah. So, next guy I want to talk about is going to be let's bore people to death. And I'm going to say day three quarterbacks. Right. Hey, listen, if you're in the fourth, fifth round, you're in post-draft waivers, right? 64 different guys started at an NFL game last year.
Huh.
64. Or at least were used. Maybe not started, but at least were used in the NFL, right? Quarterback play has been bad. Teams are desperate for quarterbacks, right? Jake Haener, fourth round to the Saints, only has to compete with Jameis Winston. I think he's got a solid clipboard and spot start career ahead of him and, you know, is certainly somebody I'm okay with my QB4 and my super flex, right? Stetson Bennett, okay, may not be, you know, the greatest player. Athletic, good leader, so we hear, right? Fourth round to a team that has a aging and sometimes infirm quarterback in Matt Stafford, right? Clayton Tune, underrated, little athletic, right? Goes to a team that's going to roll out Colt McCoy week one.
Right.
And now there's all sorts of rumors about like getting out from the Murray deal and trading him. And listen, I'm not saying he's Kyler Murray, but right. Could be worse, right? Like when you're thinking about day three picks and they're like, could be worse, right? DTR, right? Like competent enough passer, mobile, goes to Cleveland. Josh Dobbs, I think, is a competent veteran that is the two now, but there's no reason that DTR, either by the end of the year or by next year, won't be a Deshaun Watson injury away from, you know, having some starting weeks. Jaren Hall, a guy who, you know, I think fell a little bit in some people's eyes, pretty mobile, competent passer. Sometimes when you look at the numbers, better numbers than Zach Wilson had at BYU, goes to Minnesota, right? Like Kirk Cousins is not getting any younger. And so, you know, who's he competing with for the number two job there? Nick Mullins, right? So like obviously we don't love day three quarterbacks in Superflex. We don't love them at all, if anything, right? But if you've got a deep roster league, a deep rookie draft, right? If you've got fab that you can spend on post-draft waivers, a Haener or a Tune or whatever, like as opposed to like the ninth wide receiver on your team, right? Like could be worse. So for me, they're kind of risers, and I'm seeing them rise in the market too. Stetson Bennett's ADP is the late third.
Right, yeah.
Right. Now, I think some of that might be, and I'm going to credit Mitch and John from Dynasty Theory this morning for pointing this out. Some of that might be, well, I mean, there are probably some of more casual players who they're looking at the names on the board, and the names they recognize are Stetson Bennett from, like, college football. So they
Max Duggan.
Right, right. But still, right, so there's some helium there. And our friend, Mr. Scampers, who likes to follow laser pointers, says, give me DTR, right? I know there's a lot of people who love DTR. Dallas Hyder from Dynasty Warzone loves DTR relative to some other guys. So yeah, could be worse for day three quarterbacks.
Yep, I think you honestly named all the names that I have been looking into since the end of the draft. I think Tune especially, given – you know, Kyler seems perpetually banged up, is, you know, good a lock as any to miss 3 to 4 games in any given season. I think Clayton Tune is someone I'd be looking into. DTR, I actually just found out that he was Cedric Tillman's high school quarterback. And now the two of them have been reunited. But I think, you know, you made a great point of, why hold one of these guys over, you know, your wide receiver 9 or 10 is that look at Brock Purdy from last year. What was Brock Purdy's value, you know, when he was, you know, during the playoffs, you know, after the Trey Lance news? I think that's a smart way to generate value where there is none for your dynasty teams is by, you know, learning a little bit more about these day three
right.
quarterbacks.
And what one thing I forgot to mention at the top, which is like, folks, when you're in rookie drafts, I know a lot of people watching or listening know this. Some might. You're not necessarily drafting for your team and your roster. In any draft, especially I think in rookie drafts, you're drafting dynasty assets. Draft for value, trade for need. If you're in the fourth or fifth round and you have Jake Haener, Clayton Tune in a super flex economy, one twisted ankle away from 6 weeks of a starting quarterback, or you have Andre Yosivas,
yep.
Charlie Jones, right? Like Trey Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got the chance to get a little bit of a value bump and therefore you could turn it into something with a trade? It's the quarterback. BT Dubs. As an experiment very early on in the rookie process, not as a way to elevate Clayton Tune or disparage PFF in any way, but if you look at the 2022 PFF numbers for quarterbacks with like at least 300 dropbacks or something like that who were 2023 eligible, look at Clayton Tune's numbers and look at Bryce Young's numbers. Again, devoid of context, conference, level of competition, you know, right, you know, level of prospect, but you could do a lot worse if you're the Arizona Cardinals than Clayton Tune, right?
Yep. Yeah. I think Tune is one to really target. I don't think Tune is getting drafted in most drafts, but I think that's one that you could probably get even for a cheap waiver. Mm-hmm. And he may even start half the year. Of course, the Cardinals look primed to you know, move on from Kyler next year, but we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's your next guy?
Right. I think maybe to get to maybe a quote unquote bigger name from the start of the year, I want to talk about Zach Evans, running back who went in the sixth round to the LA Rams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a guy who out of high school was recruited as highly as Bijan.
Yep.
A year ago, you know, really in contention, maybe not RB1 at that point, but pretty strongly for RB2, RB3. huge fall from grace at the start of the offseason. You know, questions about his vision. You get some corners of Twitter fighting back. It kind of a lot of vitriol, really, when you discuss.
He was so divisive. Zach Evans was like a war. Yeah.
And, you know, Twitter, social media is filled with a lot of people who, you know, want to be right and want to be seen as right. So him getting sixth round capital, you know, can be, you know, sung from the rooftops or whatever. But at the end of the day, there is talent and he's going to a good situation. I think one where he should be the running back two right off the board behind Cam Akers, who, you know, had his own like kind of Disney sort of saga last year from being benched to, you know, suspended, but taken off the team for a few days and then coming back as a bell cow at the end of the season. I think that you could replace Cam Akers with Zach Evans, and, you know, perhaps there could be something there. That's another target that I probably should have said this at the start. He's a follower in the market, understandably, but now I think he's coming back into targetable range in, you know, mid to late third, maybe even the fourth. I think that's a good bet to take with one of these running backs.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, he's a faller, but a faller with new life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because he's now affordable, right? So, like, with A-Chain, it's like, truthers were kind of happy because they got draft capital and landing spot to, like, okay, there's a path to him being successful. And faders were happy because it kept the truthers invested and guys we like better fell. Zach Evans is a little different, right? Like, he's now affordable. Mm-hmm. For everybody, because he's generally a faller, but he's got just good enough landing spot to say, okay, let's roll the dice, right? And so I think you said it very well. I think there's a very good chance that he's, you know, RB2 entering the season. You know, who knows with Akers? You know, he's definitely had some drama with the team. Mm-hmm. He's been inconsistent. They also signed a UDFA who I like, Tyon Evans, right?
I do like him a lot too.
You know, and so another Evans there, right? So when we think about like could be worse landing spots for day three, which is kind of like a theme, certainly Zach Evans is one of them. Now, if you were somebody who, like, I was expecting fifth, maybe fourth round draft capital, right? So obviously six, you know, is a faller. But then it's like, well, the Rams, you know, I'll take a shot, right? Because again, running back, even if he's the two, right? I don't know that he and Akers' skill sets are so wildly different that, like, if Akers goes down, Evans doesn't get a lot of those Akers touches. So I could be wrong, you know, but. Running back is like an elevator, right? Next guy up, right? And I owe this analogy to the guys on the Rookie Hootenanny on Dynasty for Dummies, right? Running back is like an elevator. Next guy up, you're just given the carries. Carries are given. Targets are earned. Running back is an elevator. Wide receiver is an escalator. Just because you get on the field doesn't mean that you're going to get the targets that guy got or any targets at all, right? Targets are earned. Carries are given. So again, you're in the middle of the third. For me, I'm pounding running back. I'm pounding injury away running backs. I'm pounding my zero RB running back room, right? I hate saying room for fantasy. Like, I never say that. I don't know why I said that. Right. So again, you know, Zach Evans and Izzy kind of right next to each other in ADP in the, you know, 307, 308 range, right? Right after, Tillman and Boutte. So you noted Boutte on the sheet. You want to talk about another like big name faller to the sixth round with Boutte?
Yep. I mean, Boutte and Zach Evans really kind of go hand in hand in the guys who a year ago, 2 years ago were really names that were propping this class up. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, started to get, you know, kind of out of my kind of like taste for their price when you really dug into their profiles and you learned a little bit more about them. And now with the fall, it's again, like, who else is going to bring the upside of the talent that, like Zach Evans, Kayshon Boutte has. And again, with Boutte, he's going into a wide receiver room where who's he competing with? Devontae Parker, Tyquan Thornton. That's a team that's crying out for weapons. I won't pretend to know, too much more than the surface level about, Bill Belichick, the Patriots organization. But if you want to think about a guy who had off-field problems, rumored off-field problems, and then, the whole debacle with the combine where to an outsider gave just the impression that his head wasn't screwed on straight, that seems like an organization that if he is to succeed, it could be at the Patriots. And so that's another swing I'd be willing to take, in the mid third. The upside is just higher there than most other guys I could see around there.
Yeah. I tend to agree, right? Like, they have Juju, they have Thornton, they have Devonta Parker, they have Kendrick Bourne, right? You know what I mean? But like, I think Boutte is versatile enough that he can find somewhere in there, right? Mm-hmm. Among that competition. They do also bring in a new offensive coordinator this year in Bill O'Brien, who is, checks notes, not a defensive coach who wears a pencil behind his ear all the time, right? So, there's a case to be made that, Boutte, who was, some people were worrying, like, is he even going to be drafted?
Right.
Like, he got drafted, and now he's almost like he's bouncing back up. Like, people are like, I'm out on him. And now, mm-hmm. like, he's a mid-third, right?
Yep.
So all that to say, you're sitting there 306, 307, Boutte or Zach Evans?
I would go with Zach Evans. I think I really like that the analogy you dropped in there. And I think with Zach Evans, instant RB2 into a team with a coach that likes to use a bell cow running back. If you think back just to 2021, obviously the Rams offense was on fire in a way that it wasn't last year. But Daryl Henderson and Sonny Michel came in and at points were high-end RB1s. So I would rather take the bet on Zach Evans there. Both are upside plays that, I'd love to add to a roster at a pretty cheap cost.
So I'm going to do a faller, and that's questionable wide receivers part two. Jalin Hyatt, I think everybody knows the story there. I mean, people know why I'm out on him, and people who are out on him are out on him. And he went from possibly late first, NFL capital to now the third. Landing spot, though, not bad. I think, people look at it at first and they're like, I got 25 wide receivers who are all small, right? But I think I like the coaching staff. I think they're a coaching staff I trust to use him to get the most out of him. I just don't know that the most out of him is all that good. I mean, they use motion and things like that. But anyway, so the guy I want to talk about, however, is maybe a guy who's a little less on people's radars, and that's Parker Washington. So he's a sort of a tweener as far as size goes, slot guy out of Penn State. Good hands, I think, put some good moments on tape. Some people were hopeful for him. He had a hive. I think he was like, my wide receiver 13 or 14 entering the draft. He got hammered. He got 6-round draft capital, and he got a team that has Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Evan Ingram, Bretton Strange, they drafted in the second round. That's tough. That's tough. So he's definitely one of my biggest fallers when I look at all this. Looking now at where I have him, I generally probably have him even later than some other people are going to take him. Let's see. I have him down at – I buried him. Oof. Yeah. I mean, I have him essentially at like 68th in my rankings, right?
Yeah.
But I'm seeing him go like end of the fourth and a little or in the fifth round. I'm not saying I'm not gonna take him at all. And I think I did in my Twitter thread, there is some hope when it comes to like a couple of the contracts there. Like Engram's on a tag. I think there's an out in Zay Jones' contract mm-hmm. after this year. So like there's it's not all doom and gloom. But man, Parker Washington could have gotten a lot better situation considering how highly regarded people, people had him going into the draft.
Yeah, I completely agree there. Just some tough draft capital. I think wide receivers especially, we tend to fade the day three guys compared to running backs. And then when you get into that, the depth chart as you laid it out there, even though, you know, Trevor Lawrence, we do expect this to be like a high powered offense going forward. Very excited really to see. A good point. Yeah, I like what Jamie's saying there about his size. He does have an interesting profile for a wide receiver. Is just probably.
I had heard a rumor that some NFL teams were toying with the idea of converting him to running back. Mm-hmm. So Jamie brings up a like, listen, like if they all of a sudden say like, let's turn him into some sort of like Swiss Army knife running back type guy. Now all of a sudden, my sunshine and rainbows are about Tank Bigsby, isn't necessarily there.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Agnew's honestly a good comp. They did use Agnew in a lot of interesting ways. I don't
know that they're the same player. And also, I didn't name Agnew as a threat. I named the other guys. Like, I don't even really like. I don't even know if Jamal Agnew's be on the team. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you know. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Who's your next guy?
Right. You know, I do have.
Hold on, Jamie. You listening? You sitting down? Put the 3-year-old away. Watch the video, or at least have the tab open with the volume on. You're gonna like this one.
You're gonna like this one, Jamie. He was there for the gambit yesterday. But I do want to go with the last guy on my five. A big riser for me is Roschon Johnson, who got drafted the Bears in the 4th round. Of course. You know, mostly known coming out of college is the Bijan backup, but that really doesn't do Roschon justice. I think he is one of the more complete backs, really, in this draft. And he's going into a depth chart that, while it seems crowded, I think that Roschon brings a few attributes for me that will keep him on the field and let him, you know, win the role that, you know, garners the most fantasy points, which is, you know, what we're here for. And I think one of them, which may not seem as intuitive for fantasy football, is his pass protection. That was a skill that was talked up about his profile, is how good he was in the pass protection game. And you see what the Bears have been trying to do this offseason around Fields is to give him that kind of extra layer. Of course, drafting a tackle with their first pick, but I think that's where Roschon is going to step into the Montgomery role for me, over, you know, Khalil Herbert, over Deonta Foreman. I really do like Roschon Johnson. I could even see him as high as my RB4. I would take Kendre Miller right now. Kendre Miller is my RB3. Roschon would be my RB4. I'm a little bit lower on Charbonnet than you are. But yeah, I'm really happy with the landing spot for Johnson here.
Yeah, I'm going to push back a little bit on this one. He remained pretty neutral for me. Like, I was meh on him, and I'm still meh on him. I think he might have even fell for some people. His ADP roughly now is 208, right? Which I think is a little lower than he was going in a lot of mocks. Not by a lot, but certainly low. Right? I think he has, you know, a certain set of skills, like you said, that makes him a you know, good for the third down, you know, the pass protection, better receiver, which are two things that Khalil Herbert doesn't do, you know, very well, right? But Khalil Herbert is an explosive and super efficient runner. And Donta Foreman is a more than competent veteran rotational guy to put in there. If you were the Bears, would you take the rookie that you are saying has a good third down role and use him much in the rushing when you have two guys who are as good or better as rushers than him? In other words, like, everybody's got a role, right? Like, and that's the way the NFL is now, right? I'm a teacher, right? You're not going to use me as a plumber, right? even if I know my way around the pipes a little bit, right? If there's a guy who's really good at being a plumber, have him fix your pipes. Have me teach them history. Even if the plumber knows a little bit about history and I know a little bit about pipes, put people where they perform best, right? And you get your edge as an NFL team using Roschon in the third down role and not overusing him in places where you've got other guys, and you get your edge using those other guys there and not using them in roles they're not suited for. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm completely fading Roschon, right? But I was meh on him before. I'm meh on him now. I'm pretty comfortable at ADP, 208, late second. I'm going to have some shares. I think my exposure is going to reflect the fact that, like, I'm meh on him and I'm even with market. You know, Jamie is saying here in the chat, Roschon to the moon. And I just don't understand it. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing elite about him that would say to the moon, like that there's like this huge ceiling for him. Could be worse. He's my RB8.
Yeah, no, I see that. And I think in my explanation, I may have skipped right to the cherry on top with the pass protection. I actually do really like Roschon as a runner, both, you know, with the power that he does bring, but I wish I had the stat in front of me, but he was surprisingly one of the more elusive backs per PFF.
I think him and Bijan had the top two elusiveness ratings, like, which is really weird, right? Yeah.
Which perhaps would...
But yeah, they incorporate missed tackles forced into their elusiveness, so it's different, yeah.
Yeah. I do like him as a runner. I do... I could see him winning out the job. I think last year when you'd watch the Bears and, you know, to the eye test, Khalil Herbert was and is an explosive runner, but they still had Montgomery, you know, predominantly on the field when both of them were healthy. I think that Roschon brings a lot of what Montgomery brings. So I would take the bet on him, you know, being the one in. Unfortunately, what is still going to be a messy committee and with a running quarterback, which will, in theory, reduce his receiving upside. I like the ADP. Maybe me having him at RB4 kind of gives you more of my pessimism about the class. But I actually do have Roschon as a riser with the landing spot with the fourth round draft capital.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think for me, like, I'm good with the ADP too. So we're just coming at it from different angles. Like, yeah, we're both still okay taking him 208, 209, mm-hmm, right? Like, and for me, it's like the day three draft capital and the complicated backfield, I think, dampened truthers enough where, like, the ADP is affordable now and I'll have some shares. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So that concludes the Jamie portion of the program. So my last riser is basically tight ends as a group, right? And how that's going to affect draft strategy. Let me say that everybody knew about Mayer, right? I think Shoemaker, I had as sneaky coming into it. But he's still, because of name value, like, remaining affordable. Laporta is getting helium for sure. You know, a lot of us had him top three or four tight ends going into it.
Right.
Right. The second round draft capital now puts him on even more people's radar. So he's getting some helium. I want to talk about Dalton Kincaid, right? Dalton Kincaid is the wide receiver two on the Buffalo Bills offense with Josh Allen. That's the way you have to look at it. I know drafting rookie tight ends early is a fool's errand. Historically, right? The NFL is deploying tight ends differently, separating out the roles more, kind of like they're doing with running backs. And Dalton Kincaid plays the role that we want for fantasy, plays it really well, has very good hands and athleticism, and does things better than some of the receivers there, right? And now you get the premium on top of that, like 0.5, 0.75, full mm-hmm. point premium on top of that, because he's got the TE in front of his name. Like, you're not drafting a rookie tight end at 110. Shit, in 175 or 2.0, I've seen him go at 1.7.
1.7, yep.
Yeah. So you're drafting the wide receiver two with Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Something that they've kind of been craving for. He's the big slot. That's how you got to treat it, right? And so for me, he can be a real positional difference maker that I'm okay, given all those data points, spending that 110 on, right? In general, I agree that you try to pound running back and tight end late. But guess what? Since the tight end's got so much helium, ain't too many of them left. And the ones that are, Tucker Kraft, I like him a lot. I mean, you know, I'm generally around the market on him. But, you know, he's, you know, got Jordan Love, and it remains to be seen what kind of role Musgrave has and what kind of role he has. It might be a Kincaid Knox thing with Musgrave Kraft, in which case I'd probably rather have Musgrave. You know, so what the, you know, Laporta getting the helium, Mayer getting, you know, staying pretty much at market, Kincaid rising, right? Like, it took three tight ends and moved them up the board. So that whole thing of like, oh, I'll take a tight end later. Like, in the mocks, I was like, I'll take Laporta or Musgrave in the third.
All right.
Ain't happening. Right. Mm-hmm. I've seen Musgrave go late second. Laporta's going early second sometimes. Like, tight ends rose. Right. And I think some of them are going to rise to a little too rich for me, but I'm taking the bet on Dalton Kincaid.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. He is the big slot for the Buffalo Bills. If you look at the raw stats, Josh Allen does not have a great history of targeting the tight end. What he does have is a great history of targeting his slot receiver. And I think Dalton Kincaid is about to walk into a role that could produce 100 targets on a year-in, year-out basis. In those TEP leagues, he could be the next cheat code type of player. And if you're getting him, you know, as far down as the 110, that could be a real difference maker for you. I do agree as well. I think you also said it pretty accurately there, where the rest of the boats have also been kind of what's the saying? A rising tide lifts all boats or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. You are seeing Mayer, good spot, QB that likes targeting tight ends, Laporta, good spot, great offense, you know, going up. I think Schoonmaker.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it Schoonmaker. My German friend, Jesse, who's my co-host in Dynasty Fever, says he's pronouncing it wrong if he pronounces it Schoonmaker. Mm-hmm. I've heard it said Schoonmaker, so I don't know.
Yeah. So that's one who may now be the later round target. The Jets tight end who
Kuntz?
Zach. Yeah, Kuntz. I don't want to get us flagged on YouTube.
You're seeing Brenton Strange there with an ADP of 410 and second round draft capital behind a tight end who's on the franchise tag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think those guys are now the ones that we might have to start pivoting to later in the drafts. I kind of have had the philosophy that tight end isn't really the value that I like to chase higher on in rookie drafts. This class is the way the draft has played out. The class has played out. It kind of creates that interesting divergence where the ones you probably want to have are going and a little bit richer of draft capital. It's an interesting group as a whole here.
And just to kind of put a bow on it, so like the 1.9 to like the 1.12, okay, so like basically like the 1.9 to like the 2.02, for me is kind of like this flat, low-value tier and kind of has been, no matter who was moving in and out of it. I just didn't like the bang you were getting for your buck there, right? So if you have that kind of flat, low-value tier, whereas, like, why would I draft Downs when I can get Mims? Why would I draft, you know, right? And the guy now entering it could be – not that I'm saying he's Kelsey or Pitts, but could be a positional advantage and a difference maker at the position like those guys are. Lean into that ceiling in an otherwise flat tier, right? I will say one more nugget. with that tier. Not so much into the 202 anymore, but like the 109 to the 112. If I'm not taking Kincaid there, I'm probably trying to get a 24 first. Or I'm moving up, or trying to, into the top six, right? Mm-hmm. Now, folks are listening and they're saying, well, Brian, the top six are like locked and loaded. Nobody's giving up those picks. Yes and no. I'm seeing people trade around more than I expected, given the doom and gloom. And think about it this way. Even if it seems like it's expensive to get from Zay Flowers to Jahmyr Gibbs, right? How much is it going to be to get from Zay Flowers to Jahmyr Gibbs in July? How much of it is going to, you know what? Let's pull up startup draft ADP with the rookies included, right? Jahmyr Gibbs is going at the 307 as RB7, right?
The 31st player off the board-ish?
Right, yeah. Zay Flowers is going at wide receiver 28 at the 610. What's it going to cost you to get from a 6'10 player three rounds in a high-value area of a startup compared to what's it going to take now in your rookie draft? Consider trading up.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's an interesting point. The way this class is played out, the tiers, clear tiers are emerging. You know, you have that top six. For me, I would say there's really been a top 10 with the rest of the first round wide receivers and Kincaid, who is a first round pass catcher. I had a very interesting situation in a draft the other day or yesterday, where it's a 10 man league. So I was at the 201, the 111, but maybe the two in front of it made really the difference. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at that Will Levis, who I didn't want to pick, or that next tier of running backs. And instead I decided to trade it for Jahan Dotson. And I was very happy with the work I did there. I think I sent the 208 and got the 301 back as part of the rest of the trade. But after that 10th spot, there is a pretty big drop off for me. If you can move up, even you have to give what you may perceive to be a little too pricey, make the move, because I think when you lay out the startup values there, that really actually highlights how big the tiers are in this rookie draft, these rookie drafts.
Jamie, who loves mispronouncing the tight end's name, are we going to call Kareem Hunt Kareem Hunt? Are the punters going to punt the ball? Jamie, come on. you know that that's not apples and oranges. In fact, I don't even know that they're both fruit. All right. Speaking of Levis, right? Like, his fall into the second round is kind of making him affordable, but he's still kind of like, he's affordable if he's fell to the 202 for you. Like, if he's still going where he kind of was in mocks, like at the 110, I don't know that I'm still in, right? Like, or I don't know that I'm going back in or whatever I was ever in at all, right? I will say this though. You talked about the two being psychological being in front of it for the rookie draft pick. I think the psychological fact of the two for the NFL pick is interesting, right? And I'm not just saying it's just psychological. Obviously, there's a history, right? If you're a quarterback, you're either first round or we don't care about you, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. The final three teams in the first round, right? The Saints don't trade out much. There was no way the Philadelphia Bulldogs were moving off Nolan Smith, who fell to them at 30. And there was no way that the Kansas City Chiefs were not taking the hometown kid in the first round in front of the hometown audience, right? I would bet, too, that there was a strong chance that Pittsburgh in the top of the second was resistant to trading back. It's only one pick, but trading back to not take really hometown. You know, yeah, right, okay. I'm willing to bet the Tennessee Titans liked Levis enough that they tried to trade up into that late first, right? So I'm not saying treat him like a first-round pick, but I'm saying they might have tried. Like, mentally for them, he might have been worth trying to get that fifth year option for, trying to get into that first round. Again, I don't like the prospect. The offense is messy, right? But if now, if you're telling me now in a super flex economy, I can get him at the 202, where my other options are, I don't know, aging. Maybe worth a shot.
Yeah, I think the value there is a pick that process kind of dictates that you should be making at that point. I mean, if you really want to, you know, go a step further with the Titans, who by from all accounts could have moved into the first late first to pick him up. There's some talk that the Colts would have taken him at four if Anthony Richardson wasn't available. Like, you know, I don't know how much you want to put into that, but there is that value that is created for quarterbacks by how NFL teams regard them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be amiss of us as Dynasty GMs to not listen to what the NFL is saying.
All right. Well, that just about does it for us. Please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review to the Going for Two live podcast feed audio. Please make sure you subscribe, like, do all the notifications and all that fun stuff here on the YouTube channel. Thanks to all the folks in the chat who showed up. Please remember our logo design contest. DM me at @FFJunkie_ on Twitter with a 16:9 ratio JPEG or something like that. And maybe it'll be our new logo. And time for plugs. Rahul, thanks so much for coming on. Really enjoyed our time together. Where can folks find you and your work?
Right. You can find me at nrahul11 on the Bird app. New writer at Going for Two, just started in the last month. You know, really, well, first of all, Brian, thank you so much for having me on. Really had a blast. This hour and a half honestly just flew right on by. I'm very new to the content space, so hoping to, you know, put more out, get into more feeds for all of you guys, and yeah, just keep the conversation open with everyone, because I've really enjoyed all the people that I've talked to so far. Again, and thank you so much for having me on.
Right on. And folks, please remember that Going for Two has all sorts of content for you. We've got a live show for you pretty much every night of the week. The website's got all sorts of stuff on there for fantasy, including even stuff like the CFL and the XFL and all sorts of. And in the bottom right of the website, a little purple Discord thingy. Click on that. Hop into our free Discord. There's hella channels in there. It's popping off with good conversations and trade arguments. And Dynasty Saturday Night 5 even has its own channel there. You can find me on Twitter at @FFJunkie_. I also do a podcast called Dynasty Fever. Audio episodes drop on Thursdays. Goingfor2.com for articles and rankings. I've updated my Superflex rookie rankings. I've updated my Superflex Dynasty rankings to include the rookies. I'm going to be putting out like a series about dynasty running backs probably at some point soon. That's the plan. I've also I'm going to start writing for a site called RPO Football, so keep an eye out for that. And of course, you can always find me here Saturday nights at 7:30 Eastern for the Dynasty Saturday Night 5. That's a wrap. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Rahul, do you know how to end the show?
I actually do not.
In Josh's absence, you have to say, go Irish.
Go Irish.